Honorable Members. Good morning, Koliso and
Good
the
morning,
team.
Chairperson.
Do we have enough quorum to start with our meeting?
We still have three members, Chairperson, and you are the fourth one.
Okay.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Mr. Malmaza. We have, okay. Didn't I see the...
Dr. Khumalo also joins, Chairperson, so we are now five.
Okay. Can you flag the agenda? Koliso? Okay, thank you very much, Koliso, and welcome to honorable members and the invited guests. You are all welcome to this meeting. There is the agenda. Can I then request that we observe a moment of silence for meditation or prayer? Thank you very much. Can I then get the mover for the adoption of the agenda? Honorable Malimata.
Thank you, Chair. I stand to move the adoption of agenda.
Thank you. Can we get the seconder? Can I get the second, honorable members? Honorable members, can I get the second of the adoption of the agenda or amendment of the agenda?
Chair, it's Honorable Powell, I'll second.
Thank you very much, Honorable Powell. Can we then note the apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, and to our guests. I received an apology from the Deputy Minister. She won't be able to join us. And also from member Mr. Heron and Mr. Shwayi. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Koliso. We'll then go to item number 4, which is the National Public Hearing on Housing Consumer Protection Bill. We have concluded our public hearings. Today we'll then be allowing those that have written submission to present to the committee. I then take this opportunity to welcome the Builders, Masters of Builders of South Africa Development Action Group. I'm told that we have received 3 written submissions. I'm told that the other group is part of the Masters Builders South Africa, therefore their presentation will be incorporated with the Masters Builders of South Africa. With that note, we'll then increase the time for Masters Builders because they would then incorporate the the presentation of the affiliate organization to 45 minutes if they have to. And I'll take this opportunity to invite Masters Builders South Africa to take us through their presentation. Koliso, are they here?
Mr. Nisi, can you take the platform? Mr. Nisi is here.
Okay. Can you call them? It's Mr. Munisi.
Yes, Mr. Munisi. Aram Munisi. Roy Munisi.
Yes, good morning, Chairperson. My apologies, I got disconnected for a moment, so I was not able to follow. Let me take this opportunity to greet you, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, as well as the members of the committee. We really appreciate the opportunity that has been granted to us to present our comments that we have sent to the department first and foremost, and that we have sent to the parliament as part of the engagement with the lawmakers insofar as the Housing Consumer Protection Bill is concerned. So MBSA has prepared a presentation that we have circulated to the committee secretariat, and it will be presented by our senior manager who is responsible for membership support. His name is Mr. Terence Mwase. He is in attendance. And I must just indicate, Chairperson, that I am the Executive Director of Master Builders South Africa, and I am also a board member at the NHBRC. So Mr. Mwase will be doing the presentation on behalf of the organization. It would have been me, but there was a thought and feeling that perhaps it would be good to have one of the senior officials at the Federation to be doing the presentation. That is why earlier on you would have had my name there, but that has been since changed. It will be done by one of the senior managers, being Mr. Mwase. And before I step off, Chair, as well, I need to mention that there are some of our member associations, our regional associations, that was as well invited to be part of this presentation. they will not be presenting because we consolidated the comments and presentations that came from our member associations. So as the Federation, our presentation will be as well covering the comments that are coming from regional and provincial associations that belong to Master Builder South Africa. So with your permission, Chairperson, I will therefore ask Mr. Terence Mwase to do the presentation on behalf of Master Builder South Africa. Thank you. Or maybe before that, Chair, I keep forgetting this, maybe I should just introduce the team that will be doing the presentation. I've already highlighted that Mr. Mwase, our Senior Manager Membership Services, will be doing the presentation. He is accompanied by the President of the Federation, Mr. Musa Shangase. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mnisi. Maybe just to indicate that members of the committee that we have now, we have myself as the chairperson of the portfolio committee. My name is Machwene Rosina Simenya. So we then have the members of the committee, Honorable Powell, and then we have Honorable Dr. Khumalo, we have Honorable Malemaja, we have Honorable Mokgotu, we have Honorable Sekhlwayi, though we were told that he has apologized, I can see here on the system. Other members probably will join us as we proceed.
I tell Tafin.
Tafin, I don't see your phone.
I renamed my gadget. Sorry, Chair. I want to remain now.
Okay. And Honorable Tafin. Honorable Tafin is part of the meeting. So we can proceed.
And Mr. Tseki Chairperson just joined the meeting.
Okay. Mr. Tseki just joined the meeting, as I'm told. Mr. Munisi and the team, the person that is responsible to present can go ahead.
Honorable Smeya, thank you. And honorable members of the portfolio committee, we want to extend our sincere gratitude. My name is Terence Mwase, and I'm the senior manager responsible for membership services. I just want to acknowledge and extend sincere appreciation to members present, members of the portfolio committee, and also our colleagues in the industry, the DAG, and esteemed guests, including the president of Master Builders, President Musa Shangase. On the line, we also have representation from the regions. It is as a result of how we are structured at Master Builders. We do have representation on the ground. We have foot soldiers, and amongst those in attendance is Ms. Vicky Habajan. She is the executive director responsible for our activities and also for the Master Builders Association in KwaZulu-Natal. I may have missed others who are part of this meeting. We also have Jeff Andrews from the Eastern Cape. We have the Master Builders Free State represented. At the last counting, those were some who had joined us. But as we go along, I'm quite positive that other members of the Master Builders Association from the different parts of the region of the country will be joining us. Chair, with your permission, I will start sharing my screen. And I will see if I can put this into a presentation mode. Okay, so this presentation that we are presenting to you, Chair, is as a result of the consolidation of inputs that came from different associations. And it's very brief because we tried to condense as much of what we tabled before the department into a short presentation. And attached to this presentation, we also submitted an annexure, which has close references including recommendations for the respective sections of the bill, where we feel it would serve the industry, it would serve the consumer better if the department and ultimately the portfolio committee would put those suggestions and recommendations into consideration. I'll start by introducing who we are as Master Builders. Chairperson, we are a registered employer association and we are regulated in terms of Section 107 of the Labor Relations Act. In our membership, we have 8 associations. As I indicated, they are spread across the entire breadth of the country. In all the provinces of the country, we do have a Master Builders Association representing each of the more than 4,000 contractors. These are employers in the industry, and they range in size from the small home builders that you would find or that you would ordinarily call if you want renovations done in your home, to the large construction concerns. As long as it has anything to do with building, Master Builders is most likely to be the representative association for that employer. We have a long history in the industry, formed in 1904, but some of the associations predate this. As I indicated, we work from bottom up, so we have foot soldiers in each of the regions, and some of these associations were found much earlier than this. Chair, we have continuously been in engagements with the Department of Human Settlements, rather. And the idea is to work together so that there is protection for the housing consumer in South Africa. So we are very much aware of the need for us to come up with legislation that will provide a better protection for the housing consumer. But I must highlight from the onset that we have raised concerns about the current form of the bill, in the sense that ultimately, if it does go through in its current form, it's the consumer who might end up, or who is going to end up, bearing a significant burden, an unfair burden that will be imposed by some of the provisions that are proposed. And in of particular concern, Chair, I'll explain myself at a later stage, is the increase in the cost of home ownership that's going to come as a result of the additional compliance and registration fees that will ultimately come with the proposals that have been put forward. However, having said this, Chair, I must highlight, like I said, we are in agreement that we need to come up with changes that will result in better protection for our consumers. So we are very much in favor of this, and the proposals that we want to table before you, Chair, are done so in good faith. In general, without being specific to any particular clause, we've noted with concern the extension of scope in some of the definitions that have been included. For example, the definition of a home, the definition of home building, which now extends to things such as alterations and renovations. These are, in our view, going to result in additional financial burdens for the housing consumer. We are aware of the fact that leaving this to be an unregulated area of the business that goes on between a consumer and a home builder is not in the best interest in the long term as a result of possible structural defects that may come about. But by their very nature, some of the renovations and alterations that home builders undertake may not warrant the kind of attention or even the compliance requirements that are proposed in the current bill. I'll come back onto this when I get to the specific provisions in my later slide. Chair, the other additional issue relates to the repealing of Section 23. We operate in a free market environment, and we, to the extent possible, would want to promote this as much as possible. We were worried that the repeal of Section 23 seems to be working against this, Chair, in the sense that instead of opening this area or opening the operating environment to multiple players from which a housing consumer might have leverage in negotiating for favorable rates, we are now seem to be heading towards a monopolization of that space. So again, I'll talk about this at a later stage. At the, this point in time, I was just highlighting some of the concerns in general. We've also noted section 41, subsection 2, which relates to the period of guarantee on the roof, which has now been increased from the current 1 year to 2 years. I'll talk about this, Chair, at a later stage. So in addition to the general concerns, Chair, that we have noted the extension of scope which the bill provides to the mandate of the NHBRC. We have cordial working relations, and we very much aware of the very important role which the NHBRC performs in the function of protecting home consumers. However, the extension of this seemingly interferes with the constitutional competencies of other authorities, such as the local authorities. And that duplication, Chair, is what we were talking about when we mentioned the likely increase in compliance costs, which obviously would be passed on to the consumer, and they would result in a significantly in significant costs in home ownership or even things such as renovations and repairs. So this is one of the areas that we wanted to highlight. In addition, I mentioned that we have attached a document that provides recommendations to the specific clauses where this area of possible of an intersection of responsibilities between the NHBRC and local municipalities seem to be not clear, and which, as I indicated, is likely to result in astronomical cost increases on the part of the consumer. Chair, I also want to mention the issue relating to submission on exemptions, which is highlighted in section 29. That standard building agreements, which provide for supervision by principal agents, at this point in time, already carry comprehensive professional indemnity cover for insurance cover for homeowners. Chair, in the construction industry, we already have standard building agreements that home consumers and contractors make use of. And as master builders, among some of the contractor bodies that are operating in this space, we are making as much of an effort as we can to conscientize members of the public that they should insist on the use of these standard building agreements, Chair, because they do provide sufficient cover, insurance cover. A professional indemnity insurance cover is built into these contracts, and it would indemnify any against any possible costs which a home consumer might face as a result of it could be defects or work that might have been conducted, which eventually is likely to cause costs in the future. So these contracts are in place. We already have them. They are being used across the industry. And we wanted to propose that, as opposed to the current provisions that are in place, effort should rather be aimed towards ensuring that homeowners are conscientized on this, they are made aware, and they continue to insist on the application and use of standard building contracts in the industry. The good thing about them is that they incorporate and make use of, or are rather drafted with input from all the relevant stakeholders. At this point in time, I can highlight, Chair, that we are even in engagements with the Banking Association of South Africa, where up to about seven of the leading financial institutions are involved in the process of reviewing our house building contract agreement. So they are already in place, and as I indicated, they are there to do the work of protecting consumers. And Chair, that's our submission on section 29 to say, let's, if you can allow the industry to ensure that we to a certain degree, the self-regulation it is a more sustainable approach to the protection of consumers. So I will not go through the additional points that I've just highlighted, because there are close references that I mentioned or that I referred to, which we have attached together with this with this presentation. Chair, the another element that I wanted to just highlight as well relates to section 42 subsection 3, which speaks to the submission on the warranty fund. As I indicated earlier on, I was going to come back to this point in the sense that to the extent possible, we would advocate for a competitive environment where homeowners can have the choice of selecting service providers, especially when it comes to the provision of necessary warranties. And at this point in time, the proposal on development of a warranty fund seems to be working against that very element, Chair. The ultimate result, whenever a person does not have the choice or only has a single choice, they say it's an oxymoron, there's no such thing as a single choice. But the ultimate result, Chair, is that is the increasing cost on the part of the home consumer. So we are again proposing that this is an area that should be opened up to leave home consumers with the option of going through several service providers and being in a position where they can select a service provider of choice. Ultimately, the bill in its current format, Chair, will result in an increase in costs on the very consumer that it is seeking to protect. So pushing it forward in its current format, Chair, is something that we have highlighted to the Department of Human Settlements, that it will not be in the best interest of our members as contractors and also of the consumers as our customers. I'll continue again on the issue of the warranty fund, Chair, that in most instances you will find that householders' risk insurance is actually substantially less costly as opposed to the current levies that are being levied or that are that come with the NHBRC warranty protection. Again, it's the result of having a single choice. Oftentimes, this is what happens. We are proposing that we need to open this up to competition and facilitate or enable, develop or enable an environment where consumers have choice. Amongst other things, you will find that the limited warranty period is at the moment limited to 5 years, and yet the asset life extends beyond that. So these are additional features of what consumers will be able to negotiate with if the space is opened up to allow private insurance providers. Chair, as I indicated, these are some of just the high-level proposals that we wanted to put through, and our appeal is for the committee to consider this carefully. And as I've indicated, we have submitted an annexure that has close references to elaborate on some of the matters that I've just touched on. This is just on the surface, but Chair, I believe that every member of the committee has been furnished with our comments, and I would want to leave it here at this point in time and ask that if there are any questions, we'll try and respond to them, myself and the team that is attended here. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. We'll get the second presentation and then we'll then allow members to ask questions. Can we then welcome the second presentation?
There's a hand, Chair, from Mr. Mnisi.
Well, Mr. Mnisi, you want to close the... You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm not too sure, Chair, if the second presentation is not referring to what would have been the presentation by one of our associations. So as I've indicated earlier on, our presentation covers that. But Chair, I just wanted to bring closing remarks onto the presentation. If you allow me, I will not be long.
No, you're welcome, sir. No, the second presentation is another organization. We have noted that.
Thank you, Chair. In conclusion and summing up the presentation, what our members on the ground, Chair, by the way, most of our members are home builders, so our inputs are based on what we receive from them. Is that they do welcome the housing consumer protection reforms, as Terence has indicated. However, they find the bill to be cumbersome to home builders and homeowners, as it increases cost of home ownership. It discourages home improvements and economic growth. The bill seems to be taking more from the housing consumer than it protects. And they also emphasize the point that the bill provides no option for alternative private insurance cover, as it is with other industry protection measures. If you look at, for example, COIDA, it makes provision for private role players that can come on board. So that releases, admin stresses from government when you get others that are in the play, and it gives choices actually to the industry to choose where to go. So that's one area that they have highlighted and given that good example with the provisions under COIDA. And also that the reforms intended to benefit the housing consumers will end up, with a situation where it is the regulator that is controlling the fund that is actually benefiting, as compared to the home consumer benefiting from the reforms. So as a way of recommendations, the following has been recommended to the portfolio committee: that they carefully consider these comments in finalizing the bill, to which they look at limiting the definition of build to just a house or major components thereof, because the current one, it just caters for everything, and they find that to be problematic. Limitation of the definition of home builder to align it, Chairperson, to the current act. The current act defines who the home builder is, and the feeling of the home builders is that the current legislation captures it much better. With the new bill, almost anybody that, including the homeowner himself, who will try to make renovations, even if they are minor renovations, it immediately becomes a home builder and will have to register with the NSBRC. So those are some of the issues that were raised. To limit the definition of home to align to the current act, those are some of the recommendations. And the next one, Chairperson, quickly, is to include from the bill minor renovation works and improvement, not necessary for dwelling purposes. Yeah, Chair, we're talking about, boundary wall extensions. Those are not necessary for dwelling purposes, but in terms of the current bill, they are covered as in the definition of, build and home. To introduce, Chairperson, reimbursement to housing consumers whose houses did not lodge any claim in the years of the coverage. So what they are asking, what they mean is, you enroll the house and you take it as a form of insurance, and not all houses end up claiming. There are a lot of houses that are have got structural integrity, and in the period, 5-year period or the year or even 2-year period that is proposed for the roofing coverage, they haven't claimed. Their feeling is that maybe there should be some sort of reinvestment there, because you put that and at the end of the day, you're not going to use that and the money is just gone. So those are some of the things that the builders have highlighted to us. And they also wanted to get clarity in the bill with regards to state developed houses. Are they going to be contributing? It's not very clear in the bill, because I mean, if they are not, it may mean that you know, when there are structural defects that they have got to be made good, I mean, they will be going to claim to the fund, and they are claiming from the fund of private homeowners that would have contributed to the fund. So that clarity as well. The builders have requested that, and they also requested that the bill retain the homeowner, retain the owner builder option to apply for exemption as it is with the current piece of legislation. So those are the recommendations, Chair, that we have been requested to carry through to the portfolio committee by members of Master Builders South Africa. I'll leave it there, Chair. Thank you very much once again for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Munisi, and your team. Can we then have the second presentation? Members have noted the issues. They will then ask questions after the second presentation. Kholisa?
Hello, Chair. Thoma? We can hear you, Thoma.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you're audible, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Greetings, Chair, and members of the Portfolio Committee, and our partners in the civil society, MBA. My name is Thoma Kiyose. I'm a project coordinator at the Development Action Group. I will be one of the organizations that submitted to the bill itself, and we were asked to whether we were willing to provide a verbal submission to the process. And yeah, I think we prepared also a summarized version of the submission for the committee to consider. So I'll be taking you through that to the presentation, and yeah. Just to kick that as an introduction, UDEG is a non-profit organization that has been in the housing and human settlement space since 1986. I think our work has been around supporting dispossessed communities towards empowering active citizenry and to realize inclusive and equitable cities. I think ours is to support communities in terms of capacity buildings and also engaging with the processes in terms of for them to develop the agency to engage with the various stakeholders that are within the housing and human settlement space. Our work also stems or involves engagements with the public sector and also co-creation of policies that are pertaining to the housing and human settlement space. In particular, if I could mention, I think we were involved in the drafting of the RDP program and that later turned into the PHP, and that's the EPHP. And ours, we have been working with, I think throughout the process of our work, working with emerging contractors or your home builders through public sector projects, construction of those, I think in particular around 2015, that's where we worked with 14 emerging contractors to unblock 2,173 houses that were based in Khayelitsha, where I think we took the decision to say, instead of appointing the large construction company, how do we contribute towards local economic development by working with emerging contractors and to realize their CIATP growth and also to for them to run sustainable business. And through our work, I think whilst we were working with emerging contractors, we saw that there was a need to provide dedicated capacity building initiatives geared towards supporting them for scaling up their businesses and for them to be fully fledged construction companies, not the ones that you would normally see that are subcontractors to many of these sites, especially on public sector projects. But then again, I think whilst we're working with emerging contractors, we saw the arise of this sector called the small-scale rental sector. I think people are familiar with AMA back rooms in different township areas, where people are constructing backyard rooms, or a person who either benefited from a subsidized house and would want to extend or build additional units at the back of their property for the purpose of either rental or extension of the family. But then again, because of this lack of the presence from the regulatory aspects of it, people are building with or without building plans. Some individuals were building, still building without enrollment, with enrolling the units with the council. And some were seeing instances of encroachments. And for us, we are in the juncture to say we do not want to see this happening in the various township areas. How do we support the scaling up of these micro developers, this small scale rental housing sector, to formalize the structures effectively? This would require, I think, a coordinated approach from various stakeholders, even from NGOs, public sector, especially the regulatory reforms around your land use requirements, also involvement of other entities such as your rental tribunal within the space. And I think around this part, our interest is more on the council's involvement. I think looking at our processes, we've supported I think over 20 developments right now in terms of developing these rental units that are at different ranges. But then the issue has been the enrollment processes, bearing in mind that we've worked with emerging contractors. We have a database of contractors who are NHBRC accredited. But then when it comes to enrollment of these developments, the expectation in its current form is that the homeowner or the developer would be the one having to enroll under their name, or the house or the home under their name, of which is an issue because we're dealing with a majority of elderly people who are developing these backyard rooms, and they might not be technically savvy as a home builder would be. So I think ours is to say, how do we align the bill and to be aligned to the realities that are happening in the various townships, not looking at just the formal sector side, but also considering the various township areas. Yeah. So I think I started to say that we provide that support to emerging contractors and developers. I think we deliver information sessions, contractor trainings and developer training programs. But also I think as part of that work is that with the support, providing the technical skills on the ground to these individuals when they are constructing, that is facilitation of the appointment of the contractor using, I think, the JPCC contracts between the homeowner, the developer, and the builder. Also, the technical support of roping in expertise like your structural engineers to certify the development that is structured and sound. But then without that, even though we are doing that, the process of enrollment, because of the council fees and also the process itself of enrollment, is inhibiting these developers from following up on that process. And how does the NHBRC become more involved in this space? And I think our interest in the bill was in that regard, looking at the lens of the emerging property entrepreneurs, your developers, and your emerging contractors, which are seen to be homeowners. I think just to give you a glimpse of who are we talking about, I think there's a spectrum through our work that we've identified. You find that there's the two segments of these developers. One is your homeowner who would be doing your back rooms, for example, maybe depending on the size of the space, developing 4 to 6 units, a double story unit. Ideally, those ones will require structural engineering in the process. But then again, you get the micro developers, the entrepreneurial ones, who are developing these micro units in various areas and sites, and we provide that support to them. And in particular around the homeowners, I think looking at that, as I mentioned, was the fact that they are of the elderly age and most of them are not coming from the built environment and might not have the necessary technical skills to understand or the technical jargons of construction. Hence, I think from my understanding, the appointment of an NHBRC accredited contractor to construct the house or extend or develop this back or build these bedrooms is required in the space. But then again, when they go to enroll, I think I was part of that process where they told me that the homeowner needs to come and enroll the unit under their name. And of which, how does one expect a property owner who's not coming from the built environment to know the technical language and have a, what's this, an NHBRC certificate under their name? Yet they appoint these different professionals to see their developments throughout. So I think there's some concerns around that. And also I think the emerging micro developers, for them also, I think there's not been much targeted or focus to say how do we capacitate these emerging developers in the space to understand the importance and why one needs to enroll these developments, bearing in mind that they are not developing to sell these units, they are developing to hold. In this instance, they would be deemed as the consumer if they have appointed a contractor. So I think there's a bit of ambiguity in terms of who is required to do the enrollment, and it needs a bit of consideration around that aspect. And then I think looking at particular sections within the proposed or within the bill itself, looking at the function of council, section 14 sub 1, that or G, which states that council must provide trainings to home builders to achieve and maintain satisfactory technical standards in the home building industry. I think because we've been running capacity building programs over, I think, since 2016, the boardroom trainings alone are not sufficient and should take a more practical approach. Looking at the emerging contractors lens to say that these trainings should be linked to live construction projects, whether it's a private or public sector. Why I'm saying this, and there's been initiatives here in the Western Cape, I think the NHBRC has been running technical trainings for contractors in various areas to the extent of Fort George and Mossel Bay, even the Cape Town CBD, but then again, this trainings are not linked to any project. It does not translate to anything. Hence, you find these situations where contractors or subcontractors appointed on these various sites, especially on public sector-led projects, appointed to provide labor only, but it does not provide any significant CITP growth. Once that project is completed, it means that these contractors themselves are left being despondent or left to fend for themselves. How do we align the training programs, align it with the human settlements projects, so that by the time there's appointments of the main contractor who would be liable or would be required to appoint local labor, that the NHBRC is also involved there in terms of capacity building initiatives. And some considerations, Chairperson, I think, and members, I think we should also include the developers as part of the beneficiaries of these trainings, not looking at the lens of the home builders themselves. If the expectation and the bill in its current form that the developer or the home builder needs to enroll the home, then I think the developers should be included within the trainings section if required. And the council to provide homeowner education drives to disseminate information and achieve and maintain satisfactory standards in the home building. Why I'm saying this, Chair, majority of communities are not familiar with the NHBRC and who is required and what is the process. The only time you will see the council in presence at community level or on the ground is when there's an indaba that is being hosted by the human settlements, for example, and then that's where the NHBRC would come. But other than that, there's no initiative to drive homeowner education, especially if we're looking at, I think this issue when they are renovating their homes and they are not familiar with the expectations of the bill. And I think the other clause, I think within the bill itself, the automatic liability that is imposed to the homeowner. If one is not familiar with the processes, how do you expect the individual to enroll the house? How does the NHVRC initiate information drives or education drives, homeowner education drives? But then again, Chair, I think looking at the Act itself, the current Act, it made a provision under Section 15 that they would, under the funds of council, the utilization of council funds. One, I think there was a stipulation around trainings there. And in this regard, with the bill in itself has excluded the establishment of funds or funds targeted towards training of historically disadvantaged homeowners. And also, I think, and some consideration, including these developers in that. I think, Chair, in this current form, the bill itself has excluded that, and it's a bit of a concern in the sense that there's no mandate or coming from legislation that the council is required to render trainings, and without any financial or commitment, then council can obviously say that it is not part of our requirements to render such trainings to the home builders and also the developers. I think lastly, Chair, coming to this point around the enrollment of homes, I think, yes, we understand that any construction or building of a home requires the enrollment, and no construction may not commence without such. But then again, I think coming to that point that not all developers or emerging developers are familiar with the requirements of council. And I think as home builders or contractors, they might not necessarily take the responsibility of enrollment due to the fees itself or due to the fact that it's a cumbersome process to do that. And I think it is recommended that the Act is clear in terms of who is responsible for the enrollment of a home. In particular, I think also being clear, considering that majority of the developers, homeowner developers, are not coming from the built environment and do not have the necessary skills and expertise to do such or to enroll this. And it's not even factored within the costing. So I think, Chair and members, there's some consideration to say, how do we become clear within the current law who's responsible for the enrollment, especially if Section 31 provides that the failure to enroll the home itself, it requires, I think, a guarantee to cover the technical standards. And bearing in mind that majority of these individuals might not have the financial backing to provide such cover or guarantee that is required by the bill itself. And with that, Chair, I thank you so much. Thank you for this opportunity to present our comments to the bill, and I'm looking forward to the questions and answers. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chuma. Members, that was the presentation. I'm now going to allow members to ask questions for clarity, so that as we are going to engage on the bill and the department will then be very clear in terms of what the bill has to cover and what the bill has to respond to as it's supposed to strengthen the protection of the consumer. I'm now going to allow Honorable Mahotu. The hand is up. Can I get any other hand? Honorable Mahotu.
Honorable Segi as well, Chen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I would like to ask a few questions to Masters Builders South Africa. I need clarity on the statements, some of the statements that they have uttered about the bill. Since the bill has been drafted to protect the consumer, but according to Masters Builders South Africa, they are indicating that the bill is going to take more from the consumer than protecting the consumer. I want you to clarify that point or expatiate on that point so that at the end of the day, we must be in a position to understand how the bill is contradicting itself, because it is supposed to protect the consumer. That's why there are amendments that are made on the previous bill. And then another question is, how does the bill increase the cost of homeowners? I've been thinking about this, trying to understand how, because the bill intends protecting the consumers and also reducing the cost of homeowners. Or is it you, the home builders, that are going to make sure that you increase the prices of building the houses for the homeowners or for the consumers? And then another question is, how is the bill going to discourage home improvements? I mean, if you are a consumer and your budget allows you to make some improvements in your home, then how is this bill going to, you know, discourage you from doing that? Unless if you home builders are going to increase the prices and make it impossible for us to improve our houses, if the prices that you are going to charge us consumers are going to be above the inflation rate because you are chasing profit, then that's going to be a problem. Maybe if you can make me understand otherwise, or make us as the committee understand otherwise. And then my next question is directed to Dag. Can we illustrate how the bill is going to take more from the consumer's pocket than protecting the consumer? Because the aim of the bill is to protect the consumer and not to take more from the consumer. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mokhutu. Honorable Zeki. Honorable Zeki.
Chair. I think the first one, Member Mkhuti, has covered me in relation to, can they expand on what is the bill going to increase costs for consumers? How? The other one, Chair, as MBA says, they represent the contractors. Contractors have said to us that the annual registration, it's costly to them because they go maybe for a year or more without getting a job. Can that be reviewed? That's what they've asked us. What is MBA saying? The other issue, many contractors or many community members complained about the quality of the material. The quality of the material in building. Now the question is, are they themselves as MBA are able to supervise and show their contractors to do quality job? than waiting for the customers to complain or consumers to complain. The other issue, Chair, is their attendance in the public meetings. You know, maybe I'm a fundi in these things. I know people are allowed to present their, they can write to Parliament and do all those things. But I thought maybe with what they are saying, they could have attended at least one public hearing. They could have attended at least one public hearing so that they can have a view for them to listen to what the consumers are saying and the small contractors, because they're mainly people that attended our hearing were small contractors. Now, the two institutions that are here with you, Chair, seems to be coming from the bigger contractors, which the representation tends to be contradictory from what we have heard. The other issue, you know, the first presenter, sorry, I missed your name. You know, as a government person or as a politician, immediately, okay, maybe not all politicians. There are politicians who would present their views differently. But as a politician who's also a member of the African National Congress, immediately when you talk about self-regulation, it becomes a question. Immediately it pricks up a mindset that says, what is the benefit for this self-regulation? Because the history tells us self-regulation tends to disadvantage the consumers or the people that are using that that product. Thank you, Chair. I think those are the few points I wanted to raise.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Thank you, Honorable Malemata.
Thank you, Chair. Let me make it clear that NHBRC is a government entity, and the role of government is to ensure that whatever takes place within its territory of governance, it has to be regulated, it has to meet certain standards set by the government, and it has to protect the constituency itself and also those that are going to find themselves within that particular product, which in this case is the house. Now, the two entities themselves, this question will speak to them to say, how's your relationship with NHBRC, bearing in mind that you are doing one and the same work and you are serving one and the same constituency? If indeed your relationship is good, because you, all of you advocate quality, you all of you advocate compliance, have you met, have you attempted to meet and engage and show each other the good side and the bad side of the bill itself? If not, we won't be surprised, because you are in competition. Therefore, where we are, the NHBRC through us, it went exactly where it matters most, in the constituency. And people were given an opportunity, and it's people, the masses, home builders, contractors, and every stakeholder was there, and they've agreed on the bill. Now, how will you yourself guard against the unregistered home builders, those who happen to build structures, if not shady structures, that end up taking the lives of our people? In this case, you are saying we must leave things as they are. Whether this person is registered or not, can wake up and get into next door building, and this thing must not be inspected, must not be regulated, must not be registered, and come some once-off kind of phenomena, if not a disaster, then these person are not going to, I mean, these homeowners are not going to benefit, because the person who did that was not registered. In your case, what is it that you're putting in place to ensure that similar beneficiary to that particular beneficiary is going there? the dark. You condemn the board to training as if you have got something permanent that can run throughout the year. Had you been a TVET college, I would say at least you are speaking, but you also being not TVET college, meaning that you are not taking people training throughout 3-year course where they will end up having a trade in a form of diploma, then what is it that you are offering comparing to what the NHBRC is currently offering? How are you regulating and minimizing this mushroom of unregistered home builders? How are you dealing with that throughout the street, everybody can wake up and build? In your case, you are saying it's how it must be. Now, have you approached the NHBRC as private developer to be incorporated in their training and homeowner education? Chairperson, let me pause there. I think it's enough. Further emphasize that the latter speakers did cover me for some of the questions that I was posed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Malamacho. Honorable Tafeli.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings, members, and also the presenters. Chairperson, I want to take this moment and thanks everyone. We went to the provinces and we come back leaving people with high hopes of the solving their problems. But as we, as the Department of Human Settlement, we have a crisis of people. NHBRC is the protector of home builders. We have the cry of the small contractors there outside, and there is not have appointed to be a builder, although we have a problem of contractors that have buy cheap material for building, and NHBRC not say anything about the cheap material. So I want to submit those points, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I get the two organizations to respond? Mr. Munisi and Mr. Torres and Mr. Chuma.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's Mr. Munisi. I will make attempts to respond to some of the issues, and Mr. Mwase will come in as well. I'll not deal with all of them. I will avoid those that relate to the NHBRC, but I will also highlight few things that I think may be of interest to the committee. Chair, let me start off by indicating that NHBRC is one of the key stakeholders of Master Builder South Africa. And Chair, in that regard, the Executive Director of Master Builder South Africa, the very same person that is speaking, is serving on the board of NHBRC, as we have indicated earlier on. And secondly, Chair, the MBSA is one of the key stakeholders that are recognized by the NHBRC to an extent that it's represented even in the Industry Advisory Committee of NHBRC. The Industry Advisory Committee is made up of key industry stakeholders that are supposed to be advising the organization and the minister insofar as the business of home building is concerned. So the organization is well represented there, and we enjoy a very good working relationship with the NHBRC. In terms of sharing the ideas, the concerns that may be coming from either our members or members of the public, that is as well, Chairperson, done at that particular advisory committee. I'll give an example. Members asked about issues of, you know, poor workmanship, you know, use of poor quality material and so forth. In as much as we are an industry body and our members made up of contractors, we do serve members of the public as well. Most of them, they do come to us and say, look, I've been building a house. Some of them, they don't even know that NHBRC exists. Some do know that NHBRC exists. They'll come to us and say, hey, Master Builders, we have you know, hired somebody, a home builder, to build our house. We are not happy with the quality of the work that has been done there. We are not happy with the quality of the material, whatever the complaint may be. And we look into that and we check if that person is a member of a local Master Builder Association. And if a person is a member, we intervene and try to assist. We intervene and try to assist precisely because we stand for quality work as well. So when contractors apply for membership to their local Master Builders Association, the issue of professionalism, the issue of quality workmanship, the issue of honesty and integrity, those are the issues that we make sure that, you know, they are covered and members understand that those are the things that we stand for. So our members have to subscribe to those qualities and we make sure that they do subscribe to those qualities. Unfortunately, we are not an institution that is created by statute. Members are not, people are not forced to be members of Master Builders, but for those that they have got jurisdiction over by virtue of their membership, we make sure that we intervene. We have even had instances of you know, poor workmanship reported to us, and we check, we find that the member is member of Master Builders South Africa, or member of local Master Builders Association. So in that, those instances, we do refer those complaints to NHBRC and say, take the matter to the NHBRC. NHBRC is the rightful organization that can assist you as a member of the public or as a housing consumer insofar as your complaint about the quality of your house is concerned. So we do that. I just wanted to highlight that, Chairperson. I want to move to the issue of the protection and the cost of home ownership. Where we are coming from, Chairperson, is if you look at the definitions that we highlighted earlier on, you will realize that there's an extension of scope when you look at the current bill and the current legislation, which is the Housing Consumer Protection Measures Act. When we look at it, it broadens the cover. If you look at the new definition, which is not in the current bill, by the way, but I mean in the current piece of legislation, but appears in the bill, is the introduction of that, which covers you know, minor installations, repair to house, to a house, renovation, alteration, and other extensions to home that are deemed to relate to the structural integrity of home. So what we are saying there is, in terms of that definition, and maybe I need to go to the other definition to drive the point home. If you look at the current definition of home, the definition of home in the current act refers to a dwelling unit constructed by a home builder. So when you look into that and you go to the definition of a home builder now, it defines a home builder as a person who causes a home to be built for any person, including the home builder himself. So what we are saying there is that the scope has been enlarged in such a way that if I, as Roy, want to do a minor renovation, maybe I just want to put the wall, you know, the boundary wall, maybe I want to take it from, you know, 3 meters to, you know, 4 meters in terms of length. We understand the bill to be saying that that should be enrolled because it's part of the renovation, you know. So we are saying that if I look at it as a homeowner and I say I wanna just you know make my wall look much better, or I just wanna add a bathroom. It's minor work, and in some instances I may know how to actually build a bathroom, just a minor addition there. Currently, I don't have to enroll that as a homeowner, but in terms of the current bill, I will have to enroll that. And what we are saying is, it may be discouraging to me to say that, okay, I've got to make an application, I've got to, you know, pay a certain amount of money for just increasing the size of my wall. So we are saying that may result in, those kind of, discomfort may result in those kind of, administrative burden that you have got to be given, because it's not all the time that when you have got a home or a house, you need to do some minor renovation. You need to employ a builder. In some instances, there are people that know 1, 2, 3 of buildings that they can put together their bathrooms. And if you look at the current act, even those kind of people, they are actually, there's a provision that exempts them to say that if you can build your house, even if you can build the whole house, you are allowed to do that. You simply apply to NHBRC for exemption. And we are saying that going forward, that doesn't seem to be the case. Hence, we are saying it will quite honestly discourage those that want to make minor improvements. And we're coming from the view that when you want to improve your house, you want to sell your house, Chairperson, let me use this example. You will try to, you make it look good here and there, try to fix this, try to fix that. You always embark on those minor renovations. And those are the areas that you are referring to say that you rather say, oh, okay, it will cost me some money to enroll. It will cost me some money to look for somebody that knows how to approach, you know, the regulator. It will cost me some money. You know, it will cost me some stress to wait for the approval. And if I don't do it, it's a stress for me because I'm not complying with the law. I may be breaking the law. So that is where we are coming from, Chair. And we did attend, not all of them, by the way, Chairperson, we did, some of our associations, East Cape is one of those that attended the public hearings where you opened for the public to make comments. And there were notes that were taken as well in that regard. And we have looked into them. I just want to look for other questions. I may have missed Abbas, and I think Terence can come in, Chairperson, insofar as those that I may have missed are concerned. But that's the gist of what we are saying. I believe that it clarifies the point that we are making about the increased cost of home ownership. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Terrence?
Chairperson, thank you so much for the opportunity. And I also want to thank the honorable members for the line of questioning. And I hope my attempt will do justice. So I'll start with Honorable Mokoto. You can correct me if my understanding of the questioning is not correct, but you're concerned about our presentation in the sense that we have highlighted that it will increase costs significantly and also not protect the very consumer that it is meant to protect. So similarly, so Honorable Tseke mentioned the same thing, and even Honorable Tafen. But I just want to preempt my response to that question by highlighting that, firstly, as master builders, we are very much in favor of the bill, and we are very much in favor of regulation of the housing consumer sector. What we are just challenging are certain elements or aspects of it. And we are saying, prior to it going forward, can we have a conversation around how we can refine them so that they can offer more protection to our consumers? So we are not rejecting the bill to say, please, it mustn't go ahead. By all means, we are in favor of it. But some of the elements that we would want to
to the committee to look at. I'll touch on them, for example, how it is going to result in an increase in costs, as I've just indicated. And the second thing is that when it comes to public hearings, we've been in engagements with the Department of Human Settlements right from the onset, from many years ago. We tabled our input on the bill when proposals were first made for the amendments. We've been in engagements with the NHPRC on a similar matter. We've also been in engagements with the Public Relations Office of Parliament for these public hearings. I must say that not all of them were attended because we did not get all the invitations. But for example, in April, we were invited to attend the one in the Eastern Cape, and we honored those. So there's been relationships going back and forth. This is not the first time that we are tabling these proposals. We've said it before, and we are continue to say it again. And essentially what we are saying, now I'll talk about the substance of our submission today. Honorable Mokota, I hope this responds to your question. Similarly, so Honorable Tek, because you were worried about how this is going to result in an increase in costs. We have the additional compliance requirement for the enrollment of the new definition of home, which now extends beyond the current one. And in addition to that, what we've also highlighted is that the additional compliance requirement by the local authorities and the NHBRC and municipal and local government, both will require licensing on the part of the home builder as well as on the consumer. Ultimately, this will result, obviously, in increased cost of
Mr. Terence, I'm not sure whether it's my network or his. Honorable member?
It's his
network. Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Minister, we have lost Mr. Terence.
Yes, Chair, that is correct. We lost him. We're not connecting from the same location. We will try to get him back at 10%, but what perhaps I should propose is that our colleagues from, I've forgotten the name of the organization there, maybe they can deal with their questions and while Mr. Moss is trying to get back. I think okay. He's back now, 10%.
Okay.
My apologies, I lost power for a second. My apologies for that.
Proceed.
Thank you. I was just highlighting that construction is the thinnest margins, Chair. At this point in time, we're looking at around 2%. Now, we similar to any organization, a cost recovery model would require that additional cost of compliance would ordinarily be at the very least shared with the final consumer, and in this case, that's the home builder. So that's what we mean when we say that ultimately all these additional compliance requirements and enrollment fees will be eating into the pocket of the consumer. Now, the second element when we talk about increasing costs is the warranty fund, as I indicated. This is an economic effect, Chairperson. We cannot fight against it. Where there is competition, there is a reduction in overall price of a particular product or any service for that matter. And what we are advocating for is the opening up of the space to allow private sector players to come in. And this is not a space that we operate in as master builders, Chairperson. We do not provide indemnity cover Chair, when a consumer is allowed to have a choice, the ultimate goal is to ensure that the cost and the options that they have would result in a more economic and in more options, which would ultimately result in their cost. So that's what we mean when we talk about the bill ultimately resulting in and not protecting the very consumer that it's meant to serve. Now, I'll touch briefly on the issue that Honorable Tafeni as well as Honorable Tseki spoke about, which relates to defective work as well as the poor quality of material. Honorable Tseki, I know it's a concern, and as a lawmaker, when you hear of self-regulation, it can be a scary word. Through you, Chair, I can assure you that ultimately that's the most sustainable and gold standard of any lawmaking process, to ensure that there are sufficient checks and balances within a system that require or that need very little or limited intervention. And at this point in time, what we have been advocating for, Chair, is the continued use and promotion of the use of things such as the standard suite of documents or contract documents, which the industry offers and which as master builders we are promoting. I've just received a communication at this point, Chair, from a home builder in the Eastern Cape who is a military veteran, Chair. And he has highlighted all the efforts that he has made to try and get a situation that he is facing being remedied. And Chair, this is an example of the daily queries that we receive from consumers. And our approach in that is to, number one, insist and educate members of the public that the standard building agreements that organizations such as ourselves and many others offer are available for the use of the consumer in order to provide sufficient protection for any work that is conducted on their behalf. As I indicated earlier on, without any intervention, we are in engagements with the BASA, the Building Banking Association of South Africa, where they acknowledge and they realize that continued use of these contract documents not only serves the consumer, but it also protects their interests as those who provide asset financing for the construction of homes and even renovation of homes for that matter. So, Chair, self-regulation is not an enemy. Yes, it has its flaws, but within the industry, I think it would be the gold standard that would need to aim to work towards and for a more sustainable and industry. Chair, I will leave it here for now in case, I hope that this provides adequate responses to the questions that Honorable Mokgoto Tseki, Honorable Malimatse, and Honorable Tafeni raised. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tseki. Honorable Malimatse,
Honorable
Chuma.
Yes, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you for this opportunity to respond to the questions posed. I think my colleague, Ulandisa Terence, has already captured or responded to some of the points that are raised. I think I just wanted to clarify this. I think when I presented, I said that we're looking at the lens of emerging contractors and developers. And when I say emerging contractors, we're particularly looking at your grade one up until grade four as per CIDB regulations. So I think from our lens, it's coming from that, responding to Honorable Member Tseki around that we are just looking at the interest of the large construction companies. And also around that, I think our submission was done, I think, last year when it was open for everyone in terms of responding to the bill itself. But then again, we took upon ourselves to attend the public hearing, I think, which was hosted in Hout Bay here in Cape Town. Was it last week, I think, if I'm correct? And we were there, and similar points that were raised here within the presentation were raised there, and the bullet points were also circulated to Honorable Member Makanye, if I'm correct. So I think for us, it's not about we're just taking this opportunity because it's a hearing at Parliament, but we're also engaging on the ground. And for us, we've been, I think, in the space of working with communities since a long time ago. I doubt I was even born by then, since 1986. And ours is to say whatever influence is guided from what is coming from the ground. And we've been engaging with emerging contractors and homeowners in that regard. Whatever we're proposing, it stems and guided by the realities that are being faced by the day-to-day citizens in Greece on the ground. I think if I'm responding to Memohodu regarding that the bill itself is an additional cost or burden to the homeowners, I want to clarify this. I think similar to what Terence is saying, because there's an absence of e-public knowledge around NHBRC in terms of the processes, for us, I think engagement with the contractors for many years now is that very few are familiar with the NHBRC and what is required in terms of enrollment and what is required for them to be an NHBRC accredited. Hence, I think we've been conducting information sessions, specifically looking at the various industry bodies, your CIDB, your NHBRC, what is your BIPC, why is it important to be registered within these bodies, and what is the requirements and where to access them. Speaking about accessibility, or I think those are some of the issues that came from the contractors, even from the public hearing that was held in the country, is that currently the offices are inaccessible. At this point in time here in Cape Town, they are only based in Century City, in Century City. Accessibility for the day-to-day citizen is quite a challenge for them because of the absence of proper transport systems to access such offices. And how do we make NHBRC services accessible at community level? I think one of those issues that were raised even on that public hearing. Regarding this point around the cost itself, for us, or the knowledge, is that I think it's Section 31 with the current bill, subsection 2B, where it's required that the home builder is to provide the guarantee to cover the technical standards. In the instance that they have not enrolled the project or the home, and they are required to stop construction before they provide the necessary documentation and guarantees. In this instance now, one, this issue about the guarantee itself is that how does the NHBRC expect a person to provide such guarantee where it was not even factored within the costing of the project itself? Second part around that is the issue that they might not be familiar of the requirements. How does NHBRC become more intentional in doing education drives, providing this information, easily accessible information at community level? Because you can't just enforce a law to say that, no, the bill was, or the act has been enacted. Now the expectation is everyone to fall in line, without having a proper plan of saying you will be providing capacity building initiatives that are satisfactory for the communities and that they are aware. And I think that's some consideration from the council itself in terms of this education drives. And I think looking at the other point from Honorable Member Malemaja, the attempt to engage with NHBRC. We have tried to engage with NHBRC, I think, within our local context to say, how do we partner up within this training program? Because from our perspective and what we experienced through the Kailicha project was that the contractors, yes, were able to do the work, the physical work on site, and had the necessary technical skills also deemed by NHPRC that they were knowledgeable in that aspect, because one of our requirements is to say we work with NHPRC accredited contractors, and during that process we supported them to to register, to write the test and get certified as the requirement itself. But then again, we were looking at the soft skills, because I mentioned that it's an entrepreneur development course where we're looking at the business administration, financial management, looking at running a business and growing that business sustainably. So now I think through our engagements with the NHPRC was to say, how do we incorporate the current technical training programs that you provide with an outside stakeholder? And the response was simple, that NHPRC at this current form is a public sector entity and does not necessarily partner with private, or has not even been done. If there is a directive that is coming from the national body, then we would consider such opportunity to partner and deliver these technical training programs. So yes, I think around that, I think that we should consider the partnerships. For us, we're more on a partnership approach and working collaboratively to realize, I think, this building of new township areas that are built of quality. And I think the role of NHPRC is required to be, or the presence of the council is required to be in this space. And then I think going to what that the Terence spoke about regarding the definition of home, where it encompasses, I think, e-renovations also, which is an extra burden in relation to the cost, bearing in mind that the homeowner or the property owner will go through the council processes of submitting e-building plans and doing the necessary approvals in terms of, say, whether they're doing an extension or building a boundary wall. That is a requirement by legislation, by the bylaw, that they submit the building plan. That is a cost of its own. Now, you expect the same property owner to go to NHPRC to go and submit or enroll an extension of of a boundary wall. That is an extra cost for this particular individual. I think that's another lens that we need to look at in terms of the definition, because in this form is quite broad. How do we focus on the buildings and the structural integrity aspects of things? I think those were my attempts to respond to the questions posed. I'm open for more questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, any follow-ups on the questions? Maybe just to check, the NHPRC, because you are working with them, if you can help us to understand, the home builder expected to register annually. How does the same process, if I want to expand my house, employ the registered contractor of the NHPRC, how does it affect me as a consumer? Because I don't get the how part as you are responding to these issues. There is the annual fees. There is no annual fees for renovation, for alteration, for building. You as a builder, you register as a builder annually. How does these things affect consumers? If I employ an NHPRC, a registered consumer. You can note the question and then allow Honorable Mokoto to make follow-up and Honorable Malemati. Honorable Mokoto?
Thank you, Chairperson. There's something very important that I would like to make MBSA and DAG aware of about NHPRC. Since NHPRC is part of the association that has affiliated under Masters Builders South Africa. Most of the houses or the RDP houses that have been inspected by inspectors from NHBRC have defects, but they have approved them. And there is a lot of wasteful expenditure that has been incurred. So my advice is that Masters Builders go to NHBRC, tell them to pull up their socks. If their inspectors require refresher courses, they must do so, because most of the houses that they approve are of poor quality. I don't know what the problem is, or do they just go there at the end of the product when the product is finished, and for whatever reason they approve, even if, you know, the quality of the product is substandard. Thank you.
Honorable Malemata.
Thank you, Chair. I think we must be very much careful when we deal with the whole engagement, because we must be able to be sure of each and every term which is used here. There is an issue of enrollment, there is an issue of enrollment fee. If the two bodies, their concern is the enrollment fee, the increment on the enrollment fee, they must be clear, so that we are able to say we are concerned that the home-based owners will have to pop more in terms of the enrollment fee. In terms of the enrollment of any building work, it is a legislated and it must remain a must, because there's no way that we are going to allow illegal buildings on the basis that we are saying let's not enroll. Therefore, we are in agreement that enrollment fee, it will be a problem. So be the case in terms of the discussion, not to say the bill cannot go on, because the bill is not about the fee. It's about the totality of ensuring what is happening and the guarantee that the beneficiary has to get. We are saying this, gentlemen, because we are influenced by the notion that any building work has potential of risk, especially without quality assurance. That is why they're so emphatic of quality assurance in any building. Here comes Mr. Smith and his colleagues. They are saying we must exempt people from extending a hall for a distance of 2-3 meters. But the very same hall which is not regulated, enrolled, carried the strength of the house. Should anything, including a child or yourself, seated next to the very same hall that you were exempted, fall on you, what will happen? We will lose life. I'm saying let's be practical when we deal with construction, because in construction, anything can do damage. One brick, if it's dripped, it is at a higher level. If it falls down, it will cause the problems. It will kill you. Now, that is why I said, let's be careful on dealing with this. I agree if we are to simplify the English to say, yes, with extra cost. But we must further say, with extra cost, but with benefits. Because there's an insurance there. So I'm saying the two gentlemen, what I realized, Chair, is the emphasis for them to sit with the NHBRC and have some technical meetings so that there be an agreement of some sort, and we lobby them to support the very same bill so that we protect everybody in the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Malemata. Can we then get response?
If I may, Chair?
Yes.
Thomas from Dag. I think I'm going to respond to Honorable Member Malemata regarding the what are we talking about here. I think there's two parts. From our perspective, we're speaking from the lens of saying the enrollment of the home. I think in this current form, it needs to be clarified who is responsible for the enrollment. we are in the same page of saying we want to make sure that these developments or units or houses or homes are formally enrolled and are compliant, that are safe, they meet the, they tick all the boxes in terms of the health and safety and fire regulations and all of that. Now, the current thing, the issue is that because in its current form, it's not yet clear who's required to facilitate the enrollment of the new build or the home. Now, in instance, in my understanding, I think even Uche mentioned this, if I have a home, I want to extend or build at the back of my house. My understanding is that I'm going to source an MHPRC accredited contractor to erect and build the structure itself. It is within the contractual arrangements between me and the contractor that they need, or as part of the obligations that they need to enroll the property, and it's expected within the cost. Now, but majority of the contractors are not actually doing that, or majority of property owners in township areas and communities are not understanding the requirement, do not understand. Now, but now when we did or support one property owner to do that, because what we were told was that the property owner needs to enroll the development under their own name, of which that individual was coming from the coming from an education background. They were required to write a, what's this, the technical test to be NHPRC accredited before they would enroll the development under their name. Hence now there's this issue of saying how to, does the bill itself be clear in terms of who is required to enroll? Because even the emerging developers do not necessarily have the resources that the mega developers have in terms of technical skills. That hence I'm saying, as part of the training itself, how do we target also emerging developers as part of that? Not only homeowner builders, home builders, but also looking at the developers. If it's a requirement for the developer to enroll the home under their name, and then the training also needs to be specific or geared or aligned with the developers also. Not just looking at one lens, but you're saying we're training home builders as part of our training programs. But then again, the expectation of enrollment, it's the developer or the home builder. I think that is where we're coming from our lens, Honorable Man. Oh, Honorable Chair, I think that is mine. Maybe I'll allow also MBA to speak about the fees. Thank you.
Mr. Omnis.
Chairperson, thank you very much. There are questions that relate to the NHBRC chair, though I'm a board member there, I don't have a mandate to speak or respond on issues that, you know, are relating to the NHBRC. I'll only limit my response to what relates to Master Builders South Africa. Chair, we, as Terence has indicated, we are in full support of the housing consumer protection reforms. We believe that there is a need to improve that. That's first and foremost. Chair, in terms of enrollment as well, we do support the enrollment, and there's no question about that. I mean, each and every house that is being built in the country, I think we believe that it should be enrolled. If I may take the moment to just, take it a little bit further, I am one of those, people that advocated for inclusion of even rural homes, because the current act, it's a law of general application. In other words, it applies across the country. It doesn't discriminate against urban, peri-urban, and rural areas. But if you look at it now, rural areas are not covered, if you look at how the system operates, because for you to enroll the property, you must have a title deed, you must have proof of ownership of that particular property. And as we all know, in the villages and rural areas, you don't have that, because the land, it's the kings and the chiefs are custodian of the land. So you only get, the permit to occupy. In some instances, you don't only get that. So those are some of the things that we have been able to say, bring it as well, so that the protection is not limited to urban areas, but it's also covering people that are marginalized and people that need it even most. And it will even assist in terms of improving and developing the housing market in those areas. So I just wanted to mention that as well, in an attempt to show that there is an appreciation of protection to home consumers. And I must say that we appreciate that, and we want to see that happening. We're not against it in any way or form whatsoever. We want to see that happening. It's just those areas that we're highlighting that we believe need to be looked at in terms of the scope, in terms of the coverage, which in our belief, we believe it will create a burden. But you may disagree with us. We are amenable to disagreement in terms of how we interpret it. We are not saying it's hard and fast and it should be like that. We are saying this is how we interpret it when we look at it. So that's first and foremost. Like I said, the enrollment, it has to continue. We're comfortable with that. There's a difference between enrollment and the registration. What is enrolled is the property itself, is the house that is being enrolled. What is registered is the home builder that registers with the NHBRC as the home builder. So there's no renewal of enrollment. You enroll as and when you are going to build. With regard to registration, you do have to renew from time to time, and there are reasons why you have got to renew. Things change. So you need to, I think the regulator wants to check and make sure that from time to time you come back to renew. If it was that you register and just it's for once, I think at some point there will be problem. I mean, financial problems, because the regulator uses the registration fee to be able to operate, to get operational costs and things like that. So if it was to say you are a builder now, you're registering and you don't have to register again, then it will be problematic. There may be other reasons which I don't think I need to be talking about. So in terms of how often, that is something that can be debated, Chair. It can be once a year, it can be twice a year, whatever the case may be. It's something that perhaps can be left to the regulator to, look at it and find a way which will be, the good way. But indeed, if you have got to do it too often, I think it's cumbersome. It creates a problem to contractors. It goes without saying. It's a no-brainer. But I don't think it's something that we should be arguing and debating about. The regulator can decide on that aspect. And Chair, the other point that I need to make, I take the point that has been made to say that even if it's a wall extension, even if there's one brick there, that, if the quality is not good there, it may create, a problem. It may result in personal injuries and so forth. That point, Chair, we do take, but our argument was coming from the point of view that if you look at the warranty fund, Chairperson, doesn't cover personal injuries. It doesn't deal with personal injuries claim. It purely deals with the issues of quality, and that is all. So yes, here and there, you may want to link it to personal injuries, but that's not what it deals with. And that is why we don't want to get to that, because that is dealt with elsewhere in terms of other insurance covers that deals with personal injuries should the wall collapse and somebody get injured. It's not what the regulator or what NHBRC is dealing with at this point in time. So yeah, Chair, I think I've covered some of them, and if I missed others, I'm happy to be reminded of them so that I can cover them as well. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Munisi. I think we have a representative of NHBRC and the department. I'm going to give them opportunity to talk to the issues.
Thanks, Chairperson.
Okay.
Yes, it's Paul Masimola.
Yes.
I'm an acting chief director legal for now. My internet is not very powerful. May I close the mic for now?
Yes, Mr. Masimola.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members of the committee. The intention of the bill really is to protect our people out there. And the danger or where we are now, I hear the submissions are talking about self-regulation where people are engaged in agreements and contracts with builders. But where we are now, we know that to enforce those agreements in court, they are very expensive, and most of our people will not be able to enforce them as much as they do exist. So this bill, the intention is to make sure that it covers everyone. That's why we are aware that the self-regulation did not work up to now. So it's important that as government, mandate is to ensure that everybody is protected. So I'm sure the issue of the self-regulation, the bill is not having really a space for that. We encourage that everybody must be protected. And I'm sure even honorable members have indicated that we're also trying to avoid a situation where somebody just decides that he's able to build and start renovating the house, and later there are structural defects. But sometimes they even sell the house before the structural defect appears. And that it then appears when somebody else had already bought the house. So it's important to really get the project or being enrolled, every project that is undertaken to be really enrolled, irrespective of how small it might look, but it might be dangerous in the long run. We also note the request by DAG on the issues of education, public education, which I think we note, and I think they are welcome to continue engaging on how best to improve on the issues of building capacity to builders out there, especially the small builders, constructors, to ensure that we uplift the standard, and when we build, we really match the standard that is required by NHPRC and the housing codes. I am with the colleagues, Natasha from NHBRC, who's the head of legal. I'm with Rasebo Ota, Makapela, Pito Selolo, and Judge Chukomba, Judge Mo Chukomba, I'm sorry, with me, and I'm sure they will assist with some of the questions that would have been raised. Thanks. Natasha?
Good afternoon, honorable members. Thank you, Mr. Masimola. Chairperson, with your consent, you know, and due to connectivity issues, I will be closing the camera, if that is okay with you, Chair.
It's fine. It's fine, Natasha, you can proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, there has been As Mr. Masemola said, I am with Ms. Rasabota as well as Mr. Craig Makapela, who is from our technical section. Chairperson, there has been numerous issues raised, and I won't necessarily be responding to them in a chronological order, but I will be responding, you know, to some of these issues. Chair, you raised an issue in relation to the home builder renewal. Section 25.6 of the current bill provides, you know, that the home builder must renew his registration annually. So it's a once-off registration, and then it's the renewal on an annual basis of that registration of the home builder. That's in respect of the home builder renewal, Chair. Chair, there has been much, you know, said about the owner builder and exclusion from the bill, you know. Like Mr. Masemola has indicated, the main purpose of the bill is to maximize the protection of housing consumers through the warranty fund and through enforcement. And in this regard, Chair, public interest requires, you know, that an owner builder is included in this dispensation as buyers of owner-built homes, you know, also falls into this category. Chair, however, I want to mention that, you know, in terms of Section 2.5 of the bill does make provision for the Minister, Chair, after consultation with the Council, in exceptional circumstances, and if it is in the public interest, Chair, on conditions that may be determined exempt certain persons or homes from the provisions of the Act. Chair, if the Minister, if there is, you know, after sufficient consultation, there is exceptional circumstances, you know, Chair, this would be then dealt with in terms of the regulations. But it's also, Chair, to note, you know, that at the end of the day, the purpose of this bill, you know, is to ensure that there is mandatory protection to all housing consumers, you know, in the home building industry. Okay, you know, there was an issue raised in relation to certain agreements, you know, to be exempted, you know, from this particular bill. Chair, it's important, you know, to note that a contract, you know, cannot override legislation. And in this regard, Chair, you know, by placing reliance on a particular contract, you are effectively taking away from the protection that is afforded by the NHBRC through its legislation. And exempting homes built in terms of a particular agreement would result in an avenue of avoidance of protection afforded by the warranty fund. In relation to, you know, specifically insurances that and the issue that was raised surrounding it, with regards to these insurances, Chair, negligence would have to be proven, and you know, it's difficult, you know, for a ordinary housing consumer that the bill aims to protect, you know, to be able to approach court, you know, to serve that particular purpose. The law of contract is limited to private law, whereas the public interest requires, you know, intervention through regulation by the legislature. Also, Chair, you know, the bill aims to, through these contractual provisions, you know, to ensure that there are principles of equity, justice, and fairness. And these contractual provisions provided for in the bill, Chair, provide remedies to both housing consumers and home builders to protect their respective contractual rights. Chair, I know that one of the issues that was raised, you know, was especially, you know, up-and-coming home builders, you know, and the bill aims to seek to also provide protection to up-and-coming home builders. If we use a particular contract, Chair, you know, it would effectively mean that housing consumers can use those particular provisions, you know, to circumvent payments to those particular up-and-coming home builders, which at the end of the day what needs to, you know, enter into this particular market, Chair. with those disputes and with those particular contracts, Chair, you know, obtaining a date from court can take a considerable period of time, you know. It would also, you know, entail that a considerable amount of money, you know, needs to be spent. And at the end of the day, you know, these provisions ensure that the disputes may be referred to adjudication. Chair, the bill has made provision for a 28-day period in terms of which these disputes have to be adjudicated, which will then ensure, you know, speedy justice for both home builders and housing consumers equally. Chair, in relation to the issues of, you know, the extension of the warranty that was raised, Chair, at the end of the day, the bill aims, the main purpose of the bill is to provide protection to housing consumers, and by extension of the warranty, you know, Chair, that is exactly what the bill seeks to achieve, especially in relation to roof leaks, Chair. As you are aware, in certain areas, if it's limited to a certain period, a housing consumer may not be aware that there is a defect in respect of that particular roof. But extending that period, you know, and rains come only during certain times in certain provinces, would then allow, you know, that housing consumer to become aware of that problem at the end of the day. Chair, then there was an issue in relation to minor renovations, you know, that has to be included, or does the bill then seek to include those minor renovations? You know, Chair, the bill also makes provision, you know, that the regulations may be prepared to exclude certain minor alterations. However, Chair, you know, once a particular extension or renovation requires municipal plans, you know, one would not regard it as minor anymore. However, Chair, I'm going to hand over to our technical expert, Mr. Makapela, just to, you know, provide guidance in that particular regard. And then, you know, to answer any other questions, you know, that may have been raised. Thank you, Chair. Over to you, Mr. Makapela.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Chair, I will do the same, whereby I will actually close the camera to save the bandwidth so that we can engage properly. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think the first part, Chairperson, that is worrying would be where the industry wants to self-regulate. As we are aware, Chair, business of business is business. Currently, as we know, the NHBRC was actually developed because of the resistance that in 1996 of Building Industry Federation of South Africa. The then DG of Housing, Bill Corbett, decided to establish the legislation because it's not because government wanted to have control. Government wanted to protect our housing consumers by establishing making sure that the NHBRC becomes a statutory organization in 1998, because the industry was actually not doing what it was supposed to be doing, Chairperson. I think the issue of saying now they've matured enough to self-regulate, we are seeing it currently with the recession. As NHBRC, our inspectors are finding a lot of houses that are being built by small, medium, and big contractors without coming to enroll, and those builders are actually registered with the NHBRC. It's not like they don't know about the NHBRC. I think, Chair, that is one of the first part that I wanted to just put forward, that currently what we are seeing, I can't believe that the majority of the industry has come to a point where they would be able to regulate themselves. Chair, my council member, Mr. Minister, I think he tried to discuss the issue of saying what the warranty covers. In its current form, the Act talks about major structural defects. But if you look at the bill, because of the period that we've been serving under since 1998, the Act, we've noticed that there are certain gaps that the Act is not fulfilling, and it has to be changed to adjust to certain gaps that then were actually not anticipated. But also, as the society matures, these are the areas that we are finding that we need to actually improve on. Also, Chair, I think Honorable Malimach talks about the boundary walls. Truly speaking, Chairperson, boundary walls in terms of the standard are regulated through the municipality. But we've noticed that in most cases, our builders, they come and build boundary walls that are supposed to be structural element without doing a structural design. A wall is above 1.2 meter height. And those areas, Chair, a boundary wall, yes, it can be looked at as the boundary wall, but once it becomes a structural element, and a builder needs to make sure that there's an engineer that is involved in making sure that they design that wall, because we've seen walls falling on people. Now, in terms of housing consumers, we need to actually make sure that we protect them from non-structural supposed to be a structural element of the property. And then, Chair, Honorable Mokgoto talks about the BNG houses, which is the former RDB houses, that are substandard. And also in that space, Honorable Chair, the bill wants to extend to that, because most of the time you find that there's this contrast between the builder and the department, whereby now the NHBRC is caught between a rock and a hard place instead of stopping a development, making sure that they comply, but also talk to the grading, because you find that in most cases, the department just takes a builder with an NHBRC certificate without looking what the capability of that builder. If a builder is a provision one, he can't build 100 units. And those are the areas, Chair, I'm saying, in terms of quality assurance, the bill is actually emphasizing, making sure that they are covered. I think, Chair, my colleague Natasha has covered on the issue with the minor works, the major works. Those are issues that the regulations can actually come clear with them and say, this, if it looks like this, then you can be exempted, but you need to come and we confirm that our engineers look at it, our structural engineers, because we've seen extensions, Honorable Chair, where people are decapitated by slabs because it's an extension, you don't have to go to the NHBRC to assess, and you don't have to have a competent person, which is a structural engineer, signing off that property. I think, Chair, I've covered the issues of the technical component. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other input from the department? No other hands? Thank you very much to MBA and Mr. Chuma's organization for your input. Indeed, we have heard you as we are going to deliberate on the bill, and ourselves as members, we will look at those issues that you have raised. And we'll actually even listen, we'll even look at the public comments on the bill, and we will consider everything that our people have raised on the matter and yourself, and will actually continue to get clarity on certain issues from the department and NHBRC until we make sure that the bill that will be presented to Parliament represents the aspiration of the majority of our people, and indeed the bill as it's said to be a protection of consumers. Mm-hmm. If we would look at the clause by clause issues and see whether indeed the consumer is going to benefit out of the bill and is going to be protected. And thank you very much for coming to this meeting.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you very much. You are then released.
Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Koliswa, can you then put the minutes?
Okay, Chair.
I suppose members, they had copies. Have you distributed the minutes, Colissa?
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay. Can you put the first set of the minutes?
Yes, Chairperson, I'm trying to get the minutes of the 31st of August on the screen. Which ones are you seeing now, Chairperson? Hello, Chair.
We can see the draft minutes of the 7th of September 2022.
Oh, okay. No, I wanted to start with the first one. The ones from the 31st of August. Let me try and get you know, what is the problem now. Okay. Yes, Chairperson, these are the minutes of the 31st of August, where we were meeting with the provinces.
Okay, can we go to page 1 on the register? Okay, page 2. And then page 3, page 4, any issues on page 4, members? Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. page 8. Page 9. Can we get the correction or amendment? I don't see any hands. Can we get the mover for the adoption of the minutes? Tete Malimata.
Thank you, Chair. The minutes are true reflection of the needs of the meeting. I therefore move for its adoption.
Thank you very much. Can we then get second? Can I get the second? Honorable members. I still see the hands of, yes, Honorable Malachi.
I second, Chair.
Honorable Malachi, second. Therefore, the minutes has been duly adopted. Can we go to the second batch of minutes? The minutes of the 7th of September, 2022. Go to the register. Start with the register, Koliso. Okay, page 2. Page 3. Page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8, page 9. Page 10, any correction or amendment of the minutes? I don't see any hands. Can we get the mover for the adoption of the minutes? Can we get the mover for the adoption, Honorable Malimata?
Yes, Chair.
Honorable Malimata, move for the adoption. Can we get the seconder?
Second, Chair. No, no, I can't second because I was not there.
You're not doing the meeting.
The people who were there was Honorable Tafeni and Honorable Mokgotu.
And Honorable Power.
And Honorable Power. Can we get the second up? Honorable Mokgotu.
I second the adoption of the minutes, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. The minutes are duly adopted. Can we then go to the other page?
14. Just bear with me, Chair, for a minute.
Call this one.
Hello. Hello. Oh, okay. Can you see now, okay?
Yes,
okay.
The meeting of the 14th of September. Let's go to the register. Then the second page of the minutes. On the third page, the fourth, the fifth page, the sixth page. And the meeting was adjourned. Can we get the correction or amendment of the minutes? I don't see any hands. Can we then get the mover there for the adoption of the minutes? Mr. Malachi, you are chairing this meeting.
Yes, Chair. No, I was just giving space. Maybe other members will want to. Yeah, this is a reflection, Chair.
Mr. Malachi, move for the adoption. Can we get the seconder? Honorable,
I second it, Chair.
Oh, thank you, Honorable Tafeni. These are the minutes of the committee's meeting with the provinces, and there are resolutions. Can we then look at the matters arising from this minute? I'm going to propose that the Secretariat should then develop an action plan on the issues that members have raised with each of the provinces, and then in the next meeting circulate them to members, and then we can then ask the provinces and should be inclusive of the issues that we have people have raised them into the public hearing and develop the action plan around them and then be circulated to members and get the department and provinces to respond on all the issues that were raised as the resolutions. Can I get any indication that on the proposal of the how we move forward on the issues? Honorable Malamacha. Honorable Malamacha, you're trying to speak, but you're muted.
Thanks. I stand to agree with you. I second the proposal.
Mr. Malabaja, seconding. Can we get other members?
Chair, if you notice, Ms. Network, I'm saying I second.
Yes, I wanted to get other members' views on the matter. The silence means that we're agreeing with Mr. Malamaja, honorable member.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Kolisa, do you still have any other minutes?
No, Chairperson, not for now.
Okay, the report of the what?
The report of the global meeting is still before you, Chairperson. So
okay, we'll look at that in the next meeting.
The next meeting, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much, honorable members. This is the end of our meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Long live the chair.
Thank you.